We had mentioned a while ago, a number of months ago, regarding that Ben Yoin, after 3 years in Barcelona, Ben Yoin set out to Eretz Yisrael in order to fulfill his vow to prostrate himself on the caver of the Rambam, which he felt he needs to ask Mechila, beg Mechila for taking up originally the side of the anti-Maimonists, fighting off the philosophy of the Rambam and so on. The Maisa on the way to Eretz Yisrael, it turns out that he passed through Toledo, and the Jews there, they prevailed upon him that he settle there for a while, and he accepted the request. He's not only that, but he established a great yeshiva during that period of time, which became a very important mokim Torah. But it just turned out that Rabbi Yoin was nifter, and that he died very suddenly. It was in the year of 1263, and therefore was unable, of course, to visit the Kever Rambam to be able to fulfill his vow, which was his original intention. The Jewish community was stunned, of course, for the sudden patira. And, of course, they grieved and they mourned him very deeply. I believe that we had mentioned that there is an ongoing controversy that is taking place in Spain, again, as we speak, in Toledo, regarding a particular school that happens to be right bordering an old ancient Beis HaChaim, an old cemetery, which, again, is dated back to that era, dated back to the 13th century. We do not know exactly, you know, who, of course, is buried there, but it's very, very possible that these are the great people that we talk about, that we learn about. In fact, that is their resting place. There are literally hundreds of graves over there. And again, Toledo is the place that we know where the Ben Yoinim and the Rosh, the Balaturim, and so on, the Ben Umeir, Abu Lafia, the Yad Ramam, Bova Basrim, Sechta Sanhedrin, and all of the great scholars and sages of whom we learn are buried there. I happen to have in my hand here a letter, which is dated March 8th, this year of 09. And there is in London, in England, there is a committee for the preservation of Jewish cemeteries in Europe, known as the Vad LaHatzolas Bote Almin BeEuropa. So there is a committee headed by great Choshev Rabbonim, one of them is Rabbi Joachim Schlesinger, Rosh Yeshiva in England, Chaim Meyer Vosner, the son of Rabbi Shmuel Vosner of Eretz Yisrael, perhaps to be the Rav of the Satmar Kehillah in England, Dayan Donner, and so on and so forth, all signed on this particular document. Just give you just a little bit of a few excerpts of the letter. This letter is written to an ambassador in Spain, in Madrid. And the letter is as follows. Dear Ambassador Solomon, by the way, this is signed by all the Rabbonim and the Rosh Yeshivas who are part of this committee of preservation of Jewish cemeteries in Europe. So again, March 8th. So we write with great distress and disappointment as the news reaching us from the old Jewish cemetery in Toledo. We are extremely grateful. On the one hand, this is the way it goes, and you have to be nice and kind also. So they thank them, I don't know, for nothing, so to speak, but this is what it is. He says, we are extremely grateful and appreciative of your strong, he says, intervention in this case, and therefore quite shocked to hear that contrary to assurances given to the Jewish community by Spanish government representatives, additional skeletons were removed from the cemetery last week. We're talking about hundreds, by the way. We wish to express our condemnation of this further desecration of a holy Jewish site, which has sent shockwaves around the Jewish world. The fact that an undertaking given by government representatives of a leading European state cannot be relied upon is most shocking to us. Local political calculations should not come into a matter of international concern like the protection of Jewish graves, especially when dealing with an important remnant of a great historic center of Jewish life, whose rabbinical leaders are revered and their work studied regularly by tens of thousands of scholars all around the world to this day. No recognized Orthodox rabbinic authority anywhere will sanction the removal of graves in this case, and the disturbance of this historic Jewish cemetery will be a source of shame to Spain, a country that surely has a debt of honor to the great Jewish communities so cruelly destroyed there before, during, and after the expulsion of 1492. We urgently urge you to take immediate action to sanction the prompt reburial of all removed human remains at the original cemetery site in accordance with the Jewish law, and to ensure the eternal protection of the cemetery, and so on and on and on and on. It turns out that they had to reach sort of a compromise. Actually, there's two differences of opinion, I say, in the Jewish community in Brooklyn. Those who are considered to be really very authoritative, which is the committee in London, again headed by Rav Schlesinger and all the others, they came to a compromise. They realized that if they're not going to compromise at all, then they're not going to get anywhere. So the compromise was a pretty good compromise. What the government wanted to do is clearly remove in the cemetery and reinter the bones elsewhere, which means really to obliterate the cemetery and extend the school on top of what used to be the cemetery. That was unacceptable by all factions. No one sanctioned that. But they came to a compromise that they are willing to return the bones to the original cemetery, but not to return each skeleton or each body in the place of its original burial. So it means is they will be buried in the same cemetery, but not the original place of where they were taken out of. In other words, could be this body will now be in this caver, and this one will be in that caver. But it will be. They wanted to remove them all. And then there's another party committee in Brooklyn, which argues with the committee in London, says no, he says you can't show them away. If any kind of a compromise, you have to insist, put it back the way it was, because this may just open a door to other areas, Spain and in Europe as well. News gets around. And the old ancient cemeteries occupy a lot of space in Europe. And many a government would be quite eager to try, if there is a possibility, to make use of all that land, which is being occupied, you know, hundreds of years and doing nothing, just being a cemetery. Now, once you open the door, this again may lead to dangerous consequences. So these are really the two sides of the two different parties regarding the situation. But it seems that the Spanish government has more loyalty to the committee in London. They believe them to be the more authentic representative of the Jewish community. And as far as we know, that this is what we expect that they will carry out. And that is the return of the atzomas of the bones, at least at the same cemetery, if not to the actual graves of which each one was taken out of. So this is where we stand today. There's many more letters. I just wanted to just give you a taste a little bit of what's going on as we speak. There's another letter that actually that was written, this is written Lashon Kodesh, that in Hebrew, in Isra Chag, right after Pesach. And basically there they actually espouse surprise and astonishment that the government is not moving quick enough to make good on the compromise, and they are still in fact holding back. So there is some suspicion that maybe they just said this is what they're going to do, maybe to alleviate somehow to temper the tension, but we don't know for sure as yet what in fact is going to transpire. But people are not resting, and they are well on top of it and trying to do whatever is possible in order to make sure that these bones are put back from where they were taken from that cemetery. So this is what it is. You need a lot of Satya Dishmaya even after one passes on. The Gemara says, although this is Paul Kol Chosid Leis Metzoy, that a Chosid should be Mispal Leis Metzoy, one of the Pirushim, what Leis Metzoy means? One of the definitions of Metzoy means that the time of his burial, first to find a proper burial, and here we see that even if you had a proper burial, who knows, after many, many years, what the fate of that is going to be. So this is part of a tefillah that one should also have in mind, that the burial not only should be a good burial at the time, but it should remain so as well throughout the years. We continue here in the Shari Tshuva. We're up to here, which is Sif Lama Dalet. And we have here that Vom Rabbi Seinu Zachoyin Ol Vrocha. He said, "Vam Rabbi Sein Zechon Avocha, our rabbis have said that Kol Mi Sheyesh Boi Sholosh Midas Halolu." It's mentioned in Masechtas Ovis that whoever has these three midos, these very special midos, these are the crucial midos, who mitalmidov shel Avram Avinu, to be considered a disciple of Avram Avinu, to be considered a talmid of Avram Avinu, it requires, the Mishnah in Ovis says, three specific midos, three specific character traits. What are they? It says, Ayin Toivo, Veruach Nemoicho, Venefesh Folo. The Mishnah there contrasts the behavior of Talmidov Shel Avraham Avinu to Talmidim of Bilam HaRosha. Bilam HaRosha has just the opposite of these three. So the ones that are necessary to be Talmidov of Avraham Avinu is Ayin Toiva, means to have a kind eye, be a kind eye, Veruach Nemoicha, a humble spirit. And then it says, V'nefesh Fela, or V'nefesh Fala, which literally translated means someone again who is a lowly soul who considers himself to be lowly, which would seem to be a redundancy because Ruach Nemucha means to be humble, and Nefesh Fala again seems to say to be humble. Comes the Shaar Teshuvah and says, Nefesh Fala means something else entirely. And this follows on the heels what the Shaar Teshuvah said and we learned last week, and that is, Inya Nefesh Fala, the third Midah that's mentioned, Mitamidah of Chalavram Avinu, when it says that one has to be a Nefesh Fala, it means She'enu Hoylech Achar HaTaiva HaGashmis Gam Bidvarim HaMutorim. This is again which Rabbi Yoina reiterates. It means a person again who is not held hostage to his natural desires. A person who has control over his desires. As you see, Rabbi Yoina can't get enough about pressing hard this point, how important it is. And that is Nefesh Shefolo. Nefesh Shefolo means one who does not follow Acher Hatava HaGashmis Gam Bidvarim HaMutorim. I'm talking about, he says, needless to say, we're not talking about things that are forbidden. That's poshut. That's not a midas chasidus. That's something which is essential. You can't move without it to do and get indulge and engage in that which the Torah prohibited. But even those things that you are allowed to do, but to do it with constraint, not to indulge again as an outlet to become addicted and to become a slave to your instincts. So Gam B'dvar Ma'amutarim says even things that in fact are mutar. By the way, we should point out that although the Shaar Teshuvah here is bringing this, the importance of acquiring these three midot, because he's talking about the Baal Teshuvah. These are all the additional principles. As he's going, now we're learning the ninth principle, and later on we'll be learning the Ho'ikar Ho'asiri, which is the tenth principle. And all of these principles that we have been learning, Rabbi Yoina is presenting them in the order of the Baal Teshuvah to continuous, he says, work to elevate himself to the highest level of becoming the highest level of the Baal Teshuvah. The idea of Gedol Teshuvah, Shemagazat Kisakovet, to bring them as close to HaKadosh Baruch as possible. So here are all the things that Rabbi Yoina delineates to us, that which is necessary. But the truth is, if we talk about being a Talmud of Avraham Avinu, it's not limited to the Baal Teshuvah. Although he's mentioning it here in the context of Teshuvah. Because we all know, what the Tana of the Baal Yoi says, we should mention in Perikot Hei, Chayiv Odom Loima Mosai Yagiyu Masai Lamasai Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. Which means that it's imperative, behooves every Yid, who is the descendant, of course, of Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov, to try to emulate, should set a goal as closely as possible to try somewhat to have an Egiyah in the Milas and in the Midois of Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. And therefore, all of the good Midois, the good character traits that the Ovis possessed is not limited by far to the Baal Teshuvah. But Chayiv Odom Loimar, this is really imperative. This is a chiv upon everybody. But nevertheless, as much as it's important for the average person, it's all the more important. It's an additional chiyuv on the Baal Teshuvah because Rabbi Yoina points out these inyonim are me'ikrei ha'teshuvah, he calls it. It's called ho'ikr, the principle, the ninth principle, coming up the tenth principle. Every principle that he mentions is considered to be one of the ikrim in Seder ha'teshuvah. So as important it is for every yid to say chayiv odom loimar, to say to himself, Mosa yigia masa lemasa avoysa, as important as it is, but it's especially important for the Baal Teshuvah because for him it becomes me'ikrei ha'teshuvah. So he goes on to explain. If Rabbi Yoina Shaar Teshuvah is interpreting the words Nefesh Shefolo, that Nefesh Shefolo means that it's referring to a person that does not follow Taiva Gashmis, and he says that this means to be a Talmud of Avraham Avinu, well then we first have to establish who told you Avraham Avinu had that Midah? Who told you Avraham Avinu had that? Where do you see Avraham Avinu had this Midah of being someone who strictly and clearly had control over his natural desires? Where do we find that expressed in the behavior of Avraham Avinu? Well, he says quite simply, Kamashah Matzina, we find, Shomer Avraham Avinu comes down with Sora Imenu. He comes down with Sora to Mitzrayim, and there he makes the following point. He says, I'm beginning to worry, he says, about your beauty, and he says, Hine no yodati, ki isho yefas mare'ot. And as Rashi tells us, and Chazal tells us, Hine no yodati, means now I became aware. It means Avraham Avinu up to here was on such a high level that even his wife's appearance, to the sense to say that she is an Isha Yefas Mare, was something that did not appeal to him. It was something that was not something that made a mark, which the Pasuk tells us, Kiloy Nistakel Bo, Which means to say that he did not really gaze at her in the way ad ayoimahu until that particular day lehis boinein al techunas yofya. He did not ever look at her in a way to determine the nature of her beauty until it became an issue coming to Mitzrayim where she might in fact be taken captive due to the beauty that she possessed. So the Pasuk says, hine no yodati. Now, here again that tells us about Avraham Avinu's great madrega regarding someone who did not pursue but controlled his natural desires and natural instincts. So therefore, it's quite befitting when Rabbi Yonah says that nefesh yefala is one of the traits metalmidov shel Avraham Avinu, because in fact Avraham Avinu maintained and possessed this midah on the highest level. Continues on the Shaar Tshuva and says, Vom Rabbi Seinu Zechon Avrocha, then in fact that our Rebbes have said regarding a Yerushalmi Masechta Sanhedrin Perek Beis, B'Masha Kosa, there's a Pasuk in Shmuel Beis. In Pasuk in Shmuel Beis talks about David HaMelech. He comes back to Yerushalayim. And David HaMelech who comes back to Yerushalayim, the Pasuk said originally David HaMelech had 10 concubines. He had 10 Pilakshim. But the Pasuk said he did not get involved with them. As a matter of fact, interesting thing is, he did not abandon them. In other words, that let them just be lost and go astray, but rather he supported them, he gave them food and lodging and board, but did not at all get involved with them in any personal relationship. The Pasuk says, as a matter of fact, listen to the Pasuk in Shmuel Beis, that the hiyeno tzerurois adyoy muson almanus chayus. The Pasuk says that these 10 plakshim, that these 10 concubines, that they were basically bound in living widowhood. In other words, technically, David HaMelech was the so-called husband, but yet they were like living almonas. Vatihiyenu tzeruroyis, they were bound ad yoy musam until the day that he died. Did not get involved with him. And Shaar Tshuva tells a very fascinating thing. That in fact, David HaMelech abstained from being with them, with the 10 plakshim. On the one hand, he abstained, but then we are told that b'chol yoyim o'yo David mitzave lehetef es roishon, David HaMelech had commanded and instructed that their hair be dressed, v'noisen tamrukim lekashton, and ointment should be given to them to beautify themselves. So here, instructions were given to the 10 concubines of the 10 plakshim to beautify themselves, only to make the Nesoyin greater on David to abstain. Ben Yoni says, kidei lohotzik letavosoi, in order it would arouse his desire, and yet will ahachnio to subdue it. Kasha yichboi shitzroi mehen, leman yischaper loy al dvar bas sheva. In other words, the way to atone if someone did slip in the area of the immorality is to be able to have his arousal subdued and not allowed to take control of himself. That is, when you reach that level, you have clearly shown that you are atoning for the original weakness that you had in that area. So here, David HaMelech, in order to atone to be mechaper for the inyan of Bas Sheva, the Pasuk tells us that he had them at home, he kept them at home, the 10 plakshim, not simply kept them at home, but in fact, he was mitzava lehetiv his roshom, that their hair be dressed and that they should be beautified, only to subdue his yetzer hara all the more, to show that in fact that he has control, and he did. Now there's a discussion in the Mefarshim, which points out to say that this is something very interesting. Because what we find out over here is that David HaMelech did something specifically to arouse his Yetzer Hara, only in order to be able to conquer and to pass a higher test. It turns out, if you take a look, you open up a Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Yud Zayim, the Gemara tells that it's also for a person to bring himself to a test. You don't put yourself in a situation. If you're caught up in a test, fight the temptation. Do whatever is possible to conquer Yetzer Hara. But the Gemara clearly says that a person should not set a trap for himself and then conquer, try to conquer. The Chesed is going to conquer it. You never know what's going to happen. And therefore the Gemara clearly says in Sanhedrin that it's also for a person to bring himself to an Nesoyim. The question is, how did David HaMelech allow it? And the answer is quite simple. Because by David HaMelech's case, even if he would slip, these were mutter to him. These were plakshim. These were not relationships that would have been osir. It was in plakshim. And therefore, you don't have to worry about any michshol v'chet. And he therefore took this opportunity, which would be b'derech heter, yet not to allow himself even to get caught up in the web of desire, even b'derech heter, but rather to conquer the Yetzer Hara. This was the Mahalach of David HaMelech that we have. So this is one nekuda. And we continue on. This concludes, as we say, this is the Iker Hatshi. This was the ninth principle. The ninth principle, again, which he talks about, is that the Baal Tshuva has to work and exercise himself not to allow himself to be enslaved by his natural desires. We see this is a very important nekuda that Rabbeinu Yoni points out. And as we mentioned many times, this is not only for the Baal Tshuva, but all the more it is especially important for the Baal Tshuva. This is considered to be Me'ikre HaTshuva. We come now to Iker HaSiri. We come now to the tenth principle. The tenth principle, says Rabbeinu Yoni, for the Baal Tshuva, and that is the following. The tenth principle means Lehetif Pa'olov Bedovar Asher Zoda Olov. The Baal Tshuva has to make good in the area of his offense. The tikkun should be directly in the area. The tikkun should be directly in the area of where he faltered, of where he was mekalkel. The area of where he slipped, the tikkun should be in those areas specifically. Limoshel, im yistakel barayis, if a person was nichshel, he's guilty of gazing in areas of immorality. So if his aveira, if his chait is yistakel barayis, what should the hanhoge be? The hanhoge should now be in direct contrast. And that would be yisnaheg bishachus veinayim. He should now conduct himself with lowering his eyes. When we say lowering his eyes, means is to keep control of his eyes, to make sure that they do not stray and look all around. That is called Yisnahig Bishachis Oenayim. He once asked the stifler regarding what's opinion about a bocher who is not married but driving. So people thought that he'll come up and say maybe it's Bittel Peir. After all, he's a bocher. Once you have a car, you give him a car. Now he has the opportunity to go all over the place. The stifler said, wasn't talking about that. He said, in my opinion, it's not such a good idea instead of a bocher driving, because you're driving, it means behechrich, it means you're forced to have to keep looking all around because you're driving. It's not a good idea for a bocher to have his eyes looking all around, he says. Shemir Sanai. That's what he was concerned about. So, when Yonah tells here, Shari Tshuvah, in Mistakel Barayas, Yisnaik Bishachis Oenai. That's direct contrast, making good in the area of his offense. So, if he was Mistakel Barayas, this is what he should do. Just let me point out that the words of Rabbeinu Yoni is going to give us a number of examples, and this is very consistent. By the way, the Rambam tells us in Perek Beis of Hilchos Deis, and that we know, we talk about, you know, the Shvil HaZohav. The Shvil HaZohav, the golden path, basically is the middle of the road. But the Rambam tells us that although Metzarecho, that it is important that a person does not conduct himself to any extreme, but a person should take the middle of the road, which the Kotzke, by the way, said, you have to define exactly, you know, my middle could be your extreme. Depends who's middle. Who's the middle? Who decides where the borders are, where the middle is? Your centrist. Where's the middle? Who's middle? And the Kotzke Rebbe used to once say, he says, my Hasidim are very afraid about the middle, because he says, in those days they weren't cars, so the Kotzke used to say, horses travel in the middle of the road, he says. People have to conduct themselves differently, he says. So the Rambam Kaponim says that even though the proper derech is the derech HaMemutzeh, however, if someone was nichshel in an area that you're weak and you want to rectify, be misak in that area, you have to bend yourself all the way to the other extreme in order to counter the weakness, and then little by little you allow yourself again to go and follow the middle of the road. But when you want to be oiker, when you want to uproot a midarot, it's not enough to go from the extreme to the middle directly. If you want to uproot an extreme fault, then you have to go to the extreme good. And then little by little, you'll find yourself and allow yourself to go to the middle. This is the Lashon of the Rambam in Perek Beis. He gives a mashal. The well-known mashal is, he says, when you have a stick or a branch that's bent out of shape, and you want to straighten it out, you can't simply straighten it out. In order to straighten out a branch or a piece of wood that's bent, what you have to do is bend it entirely to the other side, and then slowly but surely, you're going to get it straight in the middle. So in order to uproot a midah, a faulty midah, you have to go to the other extreme, and then you will slowly get yourself into the middle. So here Rabbeinu Yoni also points out the situation. And the example which is also given, someone who is quite healthy can allow himself to eat all kinds of foods because you have an immune system that's going to protect you. But someone who is really sick, he does not have the luxury of eating anything that even borders on things that are detrimental to health, that he has to eat extra healthy foods, which is because his immune system is very weak. It is only when he becomes stronger than now he can drop that. The same thing when someone is spiritually ill, so to speak. Someone who is working on his career of being a Baal Tshuva has to, some in the beginning, go a little bit to the extreme side and then be able to go down back to the middle. So the Ben Yoni Shar Tshuva continues therefore on further. And he gives other examples. Im Choto B'Loshon Hara, he says if a person was Choto B'Loshon Hara, it's slander. Now Loshon Hara is something that is done by mouth, by Dibur. So now, again, the Tikkun has to be in the area of Dibur. What is the best way to be Misakin Dibur? Use the mouth for learning Torah. Use that same mouth that you used for Loshon Hara, use that mouth for learning Torah. So Im Choto B'Loshon Hara, Yasek B'Torah. And any aver, any limb that a person sinned with, yishtadl lekayim behem hamitzvus. Be mishtadl to use those same limbs, those same evarim, your hands, your feet, whatever it was, that you used to do an avera, be mishtadl to use the exact same limbs now to do mitzvus with them. V'chein omer Rabbi Yisaynu zechroinim levrocho. Medrash tells us, ha-tzadikim ba-oyse dover shechoytim boi hem isratzim. Tzadikim, in the exact same area with which they have sinned, they reconcile. They reconcile in the same area, in the same way that originally they sinned, and now they are doing the opposite side. They are doing it latoiv. Similarly, Oid Amru, we find Chazal have told us, Imasiso chavila shel averis, if a person has done bundles of averis, asei kenegdon chavilois shel mitzvahs. So now to counter that, do bundles and bundles of mitzvahs. And he goes on to give examples. Raglayim mamaharois lorutz laroh. If someone's feet were very quick to run to do bad, to do evil, that's what he used his feet for. He went to the wrong places. So if a person's situation, where it's raglayim mamaharois lorutz laroh, yihu rotzot to dvar mitzvah. So as of now, use the feet to run to dvar mitzvah. Run to shul, run to do an act of chesed, run for bikur cholim, run to davening. See to use those same feet that you used to hastily run and to quicken your pace to do something which is bad, use the same feet, use those feet to do a dvar mitzvah. Lishon sheker, if a person uses his mouth to speak sheker, lies, emes yehege chikoi upiv yiftach b'chokhma. Now use your mouth for the opposite. Use the mouth for clearly for truth. Use your mouth to speak words of wisdom, words of chokhma. V'toyras chesed alishoyna. And there should be toyras chesed alishoyna, which is loving kindness should be on his tongue. If someone used his hands, yodayim shoif chesdam. If someone's hands shed blood, so use those same hands now in a positive way, with your hands. What do you use your hands for? Posoyach yiftach es yodoy, he says, le'echov la'anio. So now use your hands in order to give tzedakah to your brothers, who are poor. Einayim romois, a person who had gaiv, had haughty eyes. Einayim romois, so as of now, you should change that attitude. Yedako, your person should be humble. Vishachi naim, as we said, lower eyes. And what about if you had feelings of arrogance in your heart? Leiv chayrish machshavos avim. A person basically who harbors wicked thoughts. Thoughts of immorality or all types of wicked thoughts. If these are the things that a person harbored in his mind. So now, belibo yitzpoy nimre toire. The tikkun for that is the same heart, the same mind should now be utilized to occupy his mind and his heart should be with words of Torah. And the thoughts of his heart should be involved with things of understanding, things of wisdom. And if you are a person, finally, mishalech medonim beinachim, if you are a person who caused machloikis, medonim means strife, medonim means discord, if you are a person who is mishaleach medonim benachim, so now the opposite is to counter that is yevake sholoim, seek peace, seek sholom v'yerdafeu, and pursue it. So here again, this is ha'ikar ha'asiri that Rabbi Yoina points out. Let me mention, when we started out today, when Rabbi Yoina was talking about and brought down the Mishnah Novos, when Yoina brought down the Mishnah Novos about the three special midos to be mitalmidov of Avraham Avinu, of course, when you talk about to be a Talmud, the definition of a Talmud is, I mean, we are descendants of Avraham Avinu. A Talmud, by definition, means someone who is Mekabel Hashpoah from his Rebbe. Someone who sits in a class, you know, just because you sit in a class and you have a Rebbe lecturing, a Rebbe teaching or giving a shiur, does not automatically make you a Talmud. A Talmud is someone who absorbs the teaching. Absorbs the teaching means not just in his mind. Basically, he practices. He practices. The Rebbe had ashpo on him. The Rebbe had influence on him. That's called the Talmud. If we absorb the midos of Avraham Avinu, therefore we are called the Talmud of Avraham Avinu. Absorbing that which we are influenced by the behavior of Avraham Avinu, that makes us a Talmud. Following the midos, acquiring the midos of Avraham Avinu, means Avraham Avinu had ashpo on us. Because we're learning from his midos. By learning from his midos, that constitutes a Talmud. Because that's what a Talmud always means. A Talmud only means one who received and accepted influence from his Rabbein. But besides that, Avraham Avinu is also, we are descendants of Avraham Avinu. And maybe that's why the Mishnah talks about Talmid of Chel Avraham Avinu. Let's understand something. I mean, the truth is, many great tzaddikim have all of these good traits. As a matter of fact, you can't be a tzaddik without it. And the specific mention is, be a Talmud of Avraham Avinu. Does not mention, follow the derech of tzaddikim. That also wouldn't be a bad way of statement saying it. You should follow in the ways that tzaddikim. Right? And tzaddikim have all of these. But specifically, what the Mishnah points out is Avraham Avinu. Why not all the tzaddikim in general, who also have to have that? And the answer possibly is to show us that it is within our reach. Why? Because if we are descendants of Avraham Avinu, and Avraham Avinu had it, it means that he was meirish these traits within us. That's why he's called Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu means that all of the great midos that Avraham Avinu possessed, we at least can have a chelik of it. We have the ability to reach out and to absorb some of it, if not for the fullest degree, of course, Avraham Avinu on the highest level, but we have the ability also to acquire those midos. That's what it means. It's the koyach Avraham Avinu within us. That's why Avinu, Avraham Avinu. The fact that he was Avinu means and sends us the message that it's the koyach Avraham Avinu and it's his chus, which is recently planted. It is rooted within us, which means that we have it in our teva to be able to rise and to be able to conquer al Yetzihara, to be able to acquire all of these very important milas. If you take a look in Reb Chaim Volozhiner's Sefer on Pirkei Avos, the Sefer Ruach Chaim, Chaim Volozhiner there brings a posik in Perik Hei, in Mesechtes Avos, in Sefer Ruach Chaim. He brings the posik which says, Mishalach betumoy tzadik, ashrei bono vachrov, the posik in Mishlei Chof. So, says Reb Chaim Volozhiner, Mishalach betumoy tzadik, a tzadik, who follows in the path of Hashem, betumoy, betmimis. You know what he gains? Not only that he's a tzaddik, but mishalech, again, betumoy tzaddik, a tzaddik who follows with tmimis, the pasuk says, ashrei bono vachrov. Because if you are a son, a child of that tzaddik, it means that the character traits of the tzaddik, basically, it's like genetically, it transfers over. The spiritual genetics will transfer over. And which means is that all of the midos that the tzaddik worked so hard during his lifetime to acquire it, all those midos that he worked so hard to acquire it, the fact that he acquired it becomes part of his being. Now it's part of the being, it will be carried over into his children, into the next generation. And that's why Reb Chaim Volozhin tells us that we see, which is the unbelievable thing and the amazing thing, that throughout all of the generations, that we find that Yidden were ready to be Moshe Nefesh, Al Kiddush Hashem. We just spoke about a little bit about the Inquisition, we spoke about the expulsion and so on. But through all of the Doiris, and the Balatanya himself talks about it, that there is what's called an Ahava Musteris, that there is a hidden love that every Yid has to Kodesh Baruch Hu, even a Yid who has distanced himself from daily practice, being sensitive to Avodas Hashem, far, far away. But yet, if push comes to shove, and when he's forced to give up his life, we find throughout history that Yidden would not convert, but rather would rather give up the lives. I mean, others were not Oymed Ben Isayim. But many that were, it was an astonishing sight to see who they were that were ready to give up the life rather than to convert. Where did they get this energy from? Where did they get this power from? They got it from Avraham Avinu, who passed the Asar and the Seonis, who passed the 10 tests. And many of them were, such tests were involved giving up one's life with the Kifshin Awesh. Avraham Avinu was thrown in Ur Kasdim. We find the Nesoyin of the Akedah and so on. We see the willingness and the readiness of to be Moshe Nefesh, to the Tzivu Hashem, and being that it's Avraham Avinu, Avinu means is that these traits were inherited by us, and they were bequeathed to each and every Yid, has it within his ability to be able to reach that. So the point is, that's why the Mishnah Masechta Sotos says, Mitalmidov Shel Avraham Avinu, these three midos. Even though other tzaddikim also, but the nekud is that it becomes real for us to be able to follow it. It's important to know that Avraham Avinu, and being that he is Avinu, this gives us the assurance it's not all that daunting. we stand before us and we see the tremendous task that he has, he becomes frightened, he becomes shocked. Sometimes you give up hope to the tremendously daunting task in front of you. But if you see that Avraham Avinu, who is our father, he already passed it, so he blazed the trail already for us. And therefore he paved the way for us, making it easier. He had the necessities, he had to remove the bumps. He had to remove it. But Avraham Avinu himself, who went through it already, he paved the way and made it, therefore, a little bit easier that we should be able to do it. And it is not, therefore, that daunting that we might think it is. Interesting thing is, when the Shaar Tshuva tells us that his definition of nefesh shefala, you see, the literal translation of nefesh shefala means a lowly nefesh, a lowly soul. But then we have to differentiate what does ruach nemoicha mean, which also means a humble spirit. What is nefesh shefala? So if you take a look in Rashi, Misach Tesavis, in fact, he learns that both have to do with anivus, but there's different types of anova. But when Yoyne told us, you see, Shaar Tshuva, he says, no, nefesh shefala, therefore, is talking about something totally different. Nothing to do with anova. Nefesh shefala means to say, someone who does not pursue his taivis hagashmis. She'eina hoylech achra atava hagashmis. So it's interesting to point out that the goyin in Mishle, that the goyin, the Vilna goyin in his parish of Mishle, he points out that the three well-known negative midois, I guess the cardinal worst midois of all time, it talks about hakino, v'hataivu, v'hakovoid, moitzien esodom noilom. These are very destructive, extremely destructive, and a person basically just it destroys his life. People are involved in these three things. Kino, jealousy, taiva, desire, and kovod. So the Goyim points out that the three midos, the three positive midos on the positive side, mitalmidov shel Avraham Avinu, again, what are the three midos? Ayin toiva, the kind eye. Then we have ruach nemoicha, which is the humble spirit. And we have the nefesh shefala. So the Goyim said that these three are keneged, are the opposite of kina, taiva, and kovod. So with a little bit of innovation, we can figure out how it works. So if you take, for example, ayin toiva, that is the opposite of kina. Now jealousy is when you don't forgive somebody. That's where you don't have a kind eye. So ayin toiva is the opposite of kina. And then when ruach nemoicha, which means humble spirit, that's the opposite of kovod. That's the opposite of kovod. And finally, nefesh shefala, Rabbi Yoina taught us here, that's keneged taiva. So kina, taiva, vakovod. These are the three destructive midos on the negative side. So the other three that we have over here, ayin toiva, ruach nemoicha, and nefesh shefala, as we can see, according to Rabbeinu Yoni's interpretation, nefesh shefala talks about taiva, so we actually have the three elements now countered on the positive side. The keneged, the opposite of kina, taiva, and kovod, is ayin toiva, ruach nemoicha, and in fact, nefesh shefala. So it's interesting that we have here, Rabbeinu Yoni taught us to be mative, to do the right thing, with the exact same limbs, with the exact same Eivorim, which originally you sinned with. So those Eivorim that you used to sin, so the Mahalach of Tshuva, the Derech of Tshuva is to do the opposite, to use those Eivorim, to use it on the positive side. So one of the examples that he gave, I just want to stop at that one, where he says is, Imchoto b'Loshon Hara, he says, if a person sinned with the Aveira of slander, of Loshon Hara, he said, what's the tikkun? Is Yasuk b'Toyre. So the obvious question would be, wouldn't it be something more direct? Lashon hara means slander. What does slander mean? Speaking badly about someone, speaking ill. I would think the tikkun is speaking good about someone. No? If it was chayter b'lashon hara, so what's the opposite of lashon hara? I would think lashon toiv. Lashon hara is the bad one, and lashon toiv is the good one. But Ben Yoyed doesn't say that. Ben Yoyed says, if someone sinned with lashon hara, he says, what is the etzah? If someone said lashon hara, it's yasag b'toyre. You know why? He probably means is because, as the Chofetz Chaim says and brings down the Chazals, that don't get involved too much praising other people, because there's always going to be somebody who's going to say, nah, he's not such a great guy either. As the Gemara says, Metoich Shivocho Yatabola De Genusoi. By praising someone, there's always going to be someone who's also going to find something negative about that person. So you can say about women talking to women, and saying, so-and-so, Mrs. So-and-so is smart, and somebody else says, hey, yeah, she's smart, but she doesn't have a clean house. No. So you have something positive on one side, and somebody's going to throw in a negative thing. So the klal is that be careful, because mitoch shivocha et tabol v'denginusa. So if I want to tell you to be misakon l'shon hara, I'm not going to tell you now, have a career, start speaking good about people. The idea is you don't talk about people, unless you really have to. There has to be good reason. Maybe at a simcha, a bar mitzvah, or something like that. But the nekuda is that use your dibur toiv in something positive, that is yasik b'toyre. So that's what Rabbeinu Yoni says. Imchotav lashon hara. So in fact, he should be yasik b'toyre. So when Rabbeinu Yoni tells us about the idea of nefesh shefala, that the nefesh shefala means, as we are learning, that the nefesh shefala means is that a person should not follow after his taiv gashmius. This interesting thing is when the Torah talks about, and we say it in the davening and the krishma every day, the pasuk says of kolos the surah achle bavchem bachrei nechem, the person should not explore. Do not explore your hearts. Do not explore your hearts, and do not follow your eyes. The surah achle bavchem bachrei nechem. And Rashi tells us that the Seder HaDvarim is really Ayin Roya, the eye sees. The Halev Choymet. The Torah talks about two things. The Torah mentions two things, the heart and the eyes. So it's a Surah Achrei Levavchem. Do not allow to have your heart explored. Don't go after your heart nor your eyes. But the Seder usually is Ayin Roya. First the eye sees. Right? This is where Rashi says, the eye sees and then the heart desires. Well, the eye sees first and then causing the heart to desire. The Pesuk should have said first, Lo Yisusuru Achrei Einechem. And then achrei levavchem, because the Seder HaDvarim is ayin roye, what your eye sees, that's what your heart desires. And yet we see that the Pasuk mentions first the heart. And the Alter HaKodesh actually raises that question. Why is the Pasuk mentioned levavchem before the eye? This is surah achrei levavchem, then achrei nechem, where in fact it would seem that ayin roye, the eye sees first, and then the heart desires. And the Alter basically says, because when a person sees something without intending to see it, you're not held accountable for seeing it. If you happen to walk on the street, and you happen to see something, but you did not intend to see it, you didn't really mean to see it, it just came across in front of your eyes. So if you happen to see something that you didn't intend to see, you're not held accountable. However, he's judged, says the Alter HaKodesh, a person is judged only if subsequently he desires it, and he goes back for a second look. So it's the heart that's machai of your eyes. And as the first, if your eyes see something without intention, it's not going to be a problem. Because you didn't intend to see it. So what happens? You desired it. So now you go back and have a second look. That's the one you're going to be held accountable. So there's the surah achre levavchem, and therefore achre nechem is the problem. Merely first looking at something without the heart being involved with it, you're not going to be held accountable. But you went back for that second look because you desired it. Now it's the heart that desired it. So now it's going to be the cheshm of the yenechem, which followed really the desire of the heart. And the truth of the matter is, when we talk about ruach nemucha, and we talk about, he says, nefesh shefela, talk about ruach nemucha, nefesh shefela, and what it seems to be a redundancy. Ruach nemucha again talks about lowly spirit, humbleness. Nefesh shefela, comes Rabbeinu Yoni and says, no, nefesh shefela means something else. Nefesh shefela means what? A person who is low on taiva. That's what shefela. Shefela means shofel low. But low in what? Low on taiva. By the way, how does it fit into the words? He doesn't say how it fits into the words. Nefesh shefela. I believe it's quite simply, the word nefesh means not only a soul, a neshama. The word nefesh means your want, your rotzoin. Im yeshes nafshechem. Remember what the Pasuk says, Avraham Avinu was engaging and negotiating to buy a plot, right, for Soremenu, with the Bnei Ches there, with Ephron ben Soicha, im yeshes nafshechem. What does it mean, im yeshes nafshechem? Im yeshes nafshechem means, if it is your want, your will. So nefesh means a want, a will. Nefesh follow means that you control your will. You allow your will to be lowly. You don't allow your will to dominate you. That's what nefesh follow means, according to Rabbeinu Yoina. But Rashi in Pirkei Avos, Rashim Pekov, as a matter of fact, he says that Ruach Shefala also, Nefesh Shefala also has to do with some of the Midah of Anivus. And the Mepharshim, they're also trying to explain, so what is the difference between Ruach Nemucha and Nefesh Shefala? So just an interesting thought is, in Anova also, there's very interesting, there's two types of Anovim. There are people, Anovim, basically, who really recognize their greatness. They recognize their greatness, however, they don't let it go to their heads. Anonoth, because they have their head in the right place. They understand that any gifts that they might have is a matonim and a shumayim, or maybe they indict themselves saying, look, if I do have these gifts, maybe I should be doing more. Therefore, they are not arrogant about it. They don't let it go to their head, and they are anovim. But then there are truly people who really underestimate themselves. It's a fact of life. The people who possess a lot of milus, but they are truly anovim. They make it away. They say that they're not really makir the true essence of are the godless. I believe the week before Lamashu we spoke about Rav Abishlo Frankfurter, one of the great gedolim and tzaddikim of all time, was Rav in Frankfurt in the 1700s, and even the Baal Shem Tov said tremendously great things about the neshama of Rav Abishlo Frankfurter. He was a very, very, so to speak, a big tzaddik and did not get involved in any machlokes. He was a very, very humble person. There's only one time in history where nobody was able to explain where he stepped out of character, which was the famous controversy, the Get of Kliwa, which is not the place not to talk in. Maybe once we should take the opportunity, which is a tremendously very interesting, again, one of those controversies that shook the Jewish world and the Torah world, with a particular get, Halolo Oisrim, saying that the get is possible, and Halolo Matirin, saying that the get is kosher. All the various details, again, remain to be heard. And Rav Abishlo Frankfurt was one of the Oisrim, by the way, was one of the Oisrim, and he took a lot of flack for that and did not back down, even though it went to the extent that they were, there was a particular gadol that even, they were threatening even Cheirem, Ad Kedei Kach, he did not back down, Rav Abishlo Frankfurter. But he said about Rav Abishlo, he said that he went to a particular town, away from Frankfurt, and a particular poor man who did not recognize Rav Abishlo, never saw him before, and he goes into the shul. The shul was empty. The only person in the shul was Rav Abishlo Frankfurter. He was in the shul, and this particular Oni came back to the shul because he remembered that he left a sort of like a package. He left the package in the shul, and he went to retrieve it. So he goes into the shul, and he sees that's not there. So the only one to accuse that he might have taken it is Rav Abishlo. He didn't know Rav Abishlo was. He goes over to him, and he points a finger at him and says, "Give me back the package that you stole from me." And as much as he tried to explain to him that he never saw the package, never even knew there was a package, he did not take it. He did not allow himself to be convinced, and he raised his hand and he struck him, literally. And he struck him. And he left. You say that many, many months later, this poor man finds his way in Frankfurt. And it was Shabbos HaGadol, and the shul was packed with hundreds of people listening to the drosh of the Rav. And who is up there standing giving the drosh? It was Rav Abishlo Frankfurter. It was him standing. He was the Rav. And the Yoni realizes and recognizes, this was the man that I struck, he says, a couple of months ago, accusing him of stealing my package. I have to go over to him and beg Mechila from him. And as he goes over to beg Mechila, and Rav Abishlo sees him, he thought that the man is coming to accuse him again of stealing his package. So as he comes close to him, he says, "Please believe me, I didn't take your package," he says to him. This is a person who was not even makir, he's milus, that realized that he's the Rav of Frankfurt, and yet he lowered himself to the point of again defending himself for this oni. So this is called Ruach Nemucha, is a situation, you may know you're milus, but yet you are an onuf, don't let it go to your head. Nefesh Shefalim is a person not even makir, his milus. That goes beyond. That's a different, totally different level possible of another. I want to take a few minutes to look at the Sheet Rabbeis and remaining moments that we have over here. And be quite beneficial. This is a shtickel, Nesivah Sholem, which speaks for itself. It's a beautiful piece. The Nesivah Sholem happens to be, you know, a shtickel in Sukkos about Zman Simchas Hasayinu. Everybody's looking for happiness today. And not only today, but in every century, whenever anybody was alive, throughout the lifetime, people are always trying to find happiness. Sukkos is the yont of Zman Simchas Hasayinu. And we'll see a direct correlation of what we've learned here in the Shari Tshuva. There's a shaykhah to the yont of Sukkos. And to see how the Nesivah Sholem connects it, he does not bring down the Shari Tshuva. But nevertheless, you will see the connection quite evidently. So let's take a look at Zman Simchas Hasayinu. Mekor HaSimcha, as he says, HaHisnarus Minyon Olam Hazeh. The source of Simcha is removing yourself from Inyonim of Olam Hazeh. Let's take a look. There's a mitzvah on the first day of Yontif that a person takes a lulav. You have to take the Dalad Minin. The lulav, the Esri, the Hadassim, and the Arovis. And it says, Usmachtem lifnei Hashem lekeichem. Mashmois HaKosov, the Mashmois of the Potsik is, she called Tachlis mitzvahs lekeiches Dalad Minin. He, Usmachtem lifnei Hashem lekeichem. I don't know if you ever took note of that Potsik. That when we take the lulav and Esri every year on Sukkot, you realize that the Torah tells us to take it because it says, Usmachtem lit Hashem lekechem. Did any one of us ever make a connection that we are taking the lulav and the dalad minim because to have a kim of simcha, how do we have simcha by shaking a lulav? Or shaking an arova, shaking an esri. And yet that's the lashon of the pasuk. The lashon of the pasuk clearly tells us to take the dalad minim because Usmachtem lit Hashem lekechem. V'tzorech lohovim, we have to understand, Ech shura mitzvah zu, l'tachlis ha-simcha. How is this connected, taking the Dalet Minim, how is this connected with the essence of the Yom Tov HaSukkos, which means, usmachtem, to have simcha. And so on. And then he goes further and says, what's the kesher apnimi between sitting in sukkah to the Dalet Minim as well? It is logical to contend that all of the mitzvahs have a connection, so there has to be a correlation between the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah as well as taking the Dalet Minim. What is that correlation, if any, between that? Go to the next paragraph. Look at the Loshen of the Nesiv HaSholem. Very important words. Dehine midas ha-simcha I efshar le-yehudi la-hasigo ele-kasher misna'er kolil mikol ha-noiz v'nyoin olam hazeh. Nesiv HaSholem says, if you are a person who are indulging in pleasures of this world, very rarely you're going to be happy. It's not possible. If you are a person who does not have control of your natural desires, you will not be happy. Kasher odom shikua behem, if you are steeped in the pursuit of desire, because you'll never be satisfied. You always want more. We know that Medrash tells us that the Medrash tells us a fact that no one leaves this world with even reaching half of his desires. In other words, the person has so many goals of desires. By the time he leaves this world, he realizes he never achieved even half of that which he desired. So you're never really going to be happy. You're never going to be satisfied if that is your goal. He's never satisfied. It is similar to Bechina, as the Gemara says in Sukkah, Masbioi Ro'ov. The only thing the Gemara says, Masbioi, if you try to satisfy urges, you're always going to be hungry. Masbioi Ro'ov. The more you satisfy, you're going to be hungry. In other words, you can't even attempt to try to satisfy your urges. Because you attempt to satisfy Ro'ov, you're going to be hungry. Rak, the only way is, it is only when a person, when he shakes off all in yonah mazeh, oz magia lemidis hasimcha amitis. Valderach hamoshul, hamuvim mebala musar. Here's a wonderful moshul, you may have read it somewhere, maybe as a child, or this is a quite a well-known moshul. The moshul goes as follows. Lamelech echad sheyachoy lemoid. Regarding a particular king who was very sick, varoifim omru, the doctor said, sherefu'usai hayachidi hi, the doctor said, the only refuah for him, sheyalbish ksoynes shel odom shesharui besimcha leloi kol dagos. The doctor said the only refuah for him is to wear the shirt of a happy man. In order to find a person who is happy, wear his shirt. If you wear the shirt of a person who is happy, that shirt is going to bring you the refuah. So now what do you have to do? We now have to find a person who is happy to be able to take his shirt. It wasn't so easy. So what happened? Now they went to find to search that happy person because they need his shirt. They couldn't find a man that was removed from worry. After a lot of effort, finally they managed to find someone who was very happy. But you know what? He didn't even own a shirt. You got the moral of the story. As long as you own something, you may not be happy because you always want more and more. You have to understand what we take out of this. He says, he found this person who was Sameh V'Toiv Leiv, She'en Lui Kol Dagez Omo Lehem. So he told him, She'en Lui Bechlal Kesoynes. He doesn't have a shirt altogether. And he said, I had a shirt that I've been wearing. Where do I launder it? When do I wear it? And how do I wear it? And so on and so forth. Then I'm already going to have worries how to deal with it. And so on and so forth. So let's go to the next paragraph quickly. If that's the key, if the key to happiness is not to be enslaved by physical desire, on Sukkos, you can achieve happiness. You know what the essence of Chag HaSukkos is, says the Nesiv HaSholem? What is the essence of Chag HaSukkos? What's the avoid of Chag HaSukkos? As you'll soon see. The yin of Sukkos is to shake yourself away from Inyon Oilam Hazeh. Kimaymar Moron beBeis Avrom. Beis Avrom was the Friedrich Gestalt Rebbe. As the Beis Avrom writes, because what happens in Sukkot? You leave the comfort of your house and you go somewhere in a hut in a Sukkot with 3.5 walls with some schach overhead, a very flimsy hut. And this is the house that you live in for 7 days, 8 days. That's showing you that what? That you are divorcing yourself, you are divesting yourself from the comforts of Olam Hazeh. And what you're doing is, isolating yourself, you and Hashem. That's what the sukkah is. Remove yourself from your bias. You go into the sukkah. That's where your home is for 7 days, and it's you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's all. This is the opportunity to connect with Hashem solely. He says, that explains why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us that mitzvah after. What's the connection with Rosh Hashanah? Because for a person to be able to divest himself of Olam Hazeh, you have to be in a madrega. Hopefully after Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shikol Madrega. Because now you have become serious. Your life was on the line. It's the Yom Adin, it's the Day of Judgment. After the Avodah of Yom Purim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, now we can ask you to try to separate yourself a little bit from Olam Hazeh. So the Yontif of Sukkah is asking you to leave the comfort of your house. Connect yourself to the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's what your life's goal should be about. To demand that from a Yid, the easiest time we can expect them to be able to fulfill it is after the Tkufa of Rosh Hashanah on Yom Kippur. That's the Avodah. Go to the bottom. Go to the bottom, Rabbi. All the way in the bottom. He says, the idea is the second last line, Shekol Hanoi Gashmi, it's underlined, the word Ha'oritz there. Shekol Hanoi Gashmi, any Hanoi Gashmi, he shemafrid ben Yehudi la Kodesh Baruch Hu. Last line there. Ubodei lahasik, next column on top. Ubodei lahasik is midas ahavas Hashem ledovka boy, sukis is ahava. Ahavas Hashem, if you want ahavas Hashem, in other words, you can't love Olam Hazeh and love Hashem at the same time. They're two opposites. Eish and Mayim are two opposites. It's either Eish or it's Mayim. It's either Ahavas Olam Hazeh or it's Ahavas HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can't have both. He says, Ahavas Olam Hazeh separates the Yid from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from Ahavas Hashem. So therefore, Tzorach Yehudi Levater Al Kol Hanoi Olam Hazeh. V'zehu Ikar Avodah B'chag HaSukkos Lehisnar Mikol Inyon Olam Hazeh. If you're successful in doing that, L'chein HaChag HaZeh Zman Simchoseinu. Therefore, it's called Zman Simchoseinu. Sheboi Musugolim, because only with such a hashkofa, are you capable of hasik is midas hasimcha b'shleimus? That's when you can do it. Ki miskayim boi ki maimar moran hakodesh mekobrin. Also, one of the zaydis of the Slonim Rebbes, the Kobriner, he said, "Eze oylam mole oyru mesikis." You know what kind of a world is filled with light and sweetness? He said, "Elu she'enem shikuim boi." Those who are not steeped in the world. In other words, you want to live in a world of lightness? Don't be steeped in it. If you're steeped in it, you know, you're covered over with it. You're covered with this world. When you're covered over with this world, because you're steeped into the materialism of this world, then the light of the world cannot be seen. You want to see the light of the world? Don't be steeped in that world. Then you'll be able to see it. Very interesting pun. And therefore, he says, V'ki mishal dei mitzvah sukkah, misnayir upayrish legamrim kol shaykhis l'nyono namazeh, being through mitzvah sukkah, a person is separating himself from l'nyono olam hazeh, v'ini shkua boy, he's not sunk in it, so just for Bekitzur, Rabbi, to save time, what are the Dalet Minim? The Dalet Minim represent the four basic main limbs in the human body out of which a person derives pleasure. Let's start. The Esrig, Medrash says, is shaped like a heart. That's Keneged Halev. The Esrig is Keneged Halev. By the way, that's why the Mefarshim were taught. You know, everybody who buys an Esrik is so careful to see that the Esrik is spotless and so beautiful. Because the Esrik is connected to Lev, just like in the physical heart. You don't want any spots on your physical heart. You want the heart is the mainstay of your life. You want it to be as perfectly functioning as possible. Any little problem with the heart is a problem. The Esrik is connected to Lev. That's why the Esrik also, the Hakpod is, it should be as pure as possible. The Hadassim is, if you recognize, is eye-shaped. It's connected to the eye. The eye is the source of pleasure. Eye in Roya. That's where the eye is from. What is the Arovis, right? What is the Arovis? The willow? The willow is shaped like the lips. That's what the Medrash tells us. It's connected hapeh. And then, of course, the lulav is the spine of the human body, which basically controls everything, all the chushim, everything that a person feels. That's the spinal cord. Because Baruch Hu says, give all of those to me. If you are able to sacrifice these four Eivorim to Kodesh Baruch Hu, you will not be steeped in Olam Hazeh, and then you can be happy. So, Lekachtem Lochem, he says, give Lochem, give me yourselves, says the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Don't allow Olam Hazeh to ensnare you, to trap you. By taking the Dalet Minim, you are giving the Lochem, you're giving up the Lochem. And if you give up Lochem, you're giving up the mainstay of the Eivorim that are connected to Taiva, and you give that up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then are capable of being happy. So here's a very, very important message. We can hear this all the time. It doesn't come easy. These are things that we have to work at, and the more that we're successful, Bez Hashem, we will be zoche to find happiness and enrich our lives. God.